Welcome in. That's right. Adrian Lawrence, and I'm filling in on the Damage Report. Thanks so much for joining us today. We have an amazing show for you, and there's so much to talk about, especially going on in politics. Somebody's got something going on in Georgia, and it's not looking good in New York. But fortunately, we have Jordan Yule joining us today. Jordan, you political activist, how is everything going?
Oh, it's been a busy couple of weeks. I mean, as we're going to get into, it's been pretty hectic. But also, I mean, student debt payments are resuming today. Interest starts to accumulate. I'm sure many viewers are just as stressed as I am.
Hear that. That is fantastic. Okay, so let's go ahead and kick things off and hear from Donald Trump.
And he's got a bad group. They're thugs. They're radical left fascists. They're Marxists, they're communists, they have the worst people. But these people made these indictments. So when they say, oh, Donald Trump is going to court. No, no, we're going to court to fight a crooked system, a corrupt system. And Democrats better be careful what they wish for.
Oof, yeah, Donald Trump had something to say, as he always does, because it's just another day and another veiled online threat from that man. He posted that video message after entering a non-guilty plea in Fulton County yesterday. Now, the former president, he was none too pleased. Why? Well, because Georgia Governor Brian Kemp refused to maybe attack the district attorney who happens to be prosecuting Trump and 18 of his cohorts. Yeah, Governor Brian Kemp, here he is squashing any idea of calling a special session targeting DA Fani Willis.
My concerns with the Fulton County District Attorney's handling of this case and the special purpose grand jury have been well documented. We are now seeing what happens when prosecutors move forward with highly charged indictments and trials in the middle of an election. Simply put, it sows distrust and provides easy pickings for those who see the district attorney's action as guided by politics. But let me be clear. We have a law in the state of Georgia that clearly outlines the legal steps that can be taken if constituents believe their local prosecutors are violating their oath by engaging in unethical or illegal behavior. Up to this point, I have not seen any evidence that DA Willis's actions or lack thereof warrant action by the Prosecuting Attorney Oversight Commission. But that will ultimately be a decision that the commission will make. Regardless, in my mind, a special session of the General Assembly to end run around this law is not feasible and may ultimately prove to be unconstitutional. The bottom line is that in the state of Georgia, as long as I'm governor, we're going to follow the law and the Constitution, regardless of who it helps or harms politically.
Wow, Governor Brian Kemp really seems to be aligned with DA Fani Willis in not allowing Trump to get away with trying to interfere with that Georgia election. It really seems like he's taking a very aggressive stance, especially for Willis being a Democrat appointed DA or elected, excuse me. And then Kemp being very much a member of the GOP. Jordan, are you kind of shocked that Kemp is so willing to stand against Trump?
Yes and no. I mean, Kemp was always a big Trump ally, but I think the situation that he's finding himself in here, like a lot of Republicans in Georgia, is they don't want to be pulled down by Trump. You know, they see just how serious this has gotten. It's not just rhetoric. It's not just pandering to the base. It's not just throwing red meat to the audience. These are allegedly, but they certainly look like serious crimes that are implicating many more people than just Trump. Why would they go to jail for this guy? Why would they face any punishment for this guy? There's no loyalty among thieves. They're just looking out for themselves. This is purely a self-preservation tactic.
Yes, it definitely seems to be the case with Kemp. And I just find it so interesting because as we've seen in Washington, so many members of the GOP have aligned themselves with Trump since day one of him calling the election in 2020 being a farce, that it was secured by fraud with these allegations against Biden and claiming election fraud, voter fraud, all of these things. So many members of the GOP went ahead and backed Trump. But then you had individuals like Brian Kemp, who is a member of the GOP, but had no problem problem earning Trump's ire, because as a governor, he has long refused to challenge a 2020 presidential election results there in Georgia. And also, as we saw yesterday with Governor Kemp, well, he also alluded to why he's so unwilling to maybe push Willis out of being the DA.
The speaker laid that out pretty clearly yesterday, because if he's wanting to defund a district attorney, it's going to defund all of them. And this is a conversation. He's a legislator. If he wants to have that conversation, he can do it during the regular session that we have coming up in January. But let me just say this. You know, these are the distractions that get you to lose elections. The last time we were talking about special sessions here in the state of Georgia, just a few weeks later, the Republican majority lost 2 U.S. Senate races.
Yeah, Jordan, I think you're spot on that there is a sense of self-preservation there. Maybe Kemp could see what a lot of other members of the GOP couldn't see, was that it will hurt the party to go ahead and upend the Constitution just so Trump can get away with his efforts to undermine democracy.
Yeah, it's gotten too real for these people. Again, it's not just rhetoric. Like you pointed out, he was willing to criticize the results of the 2020 election when there was nothing at stake, when they were just delivering talking points and trying to rile people up. You're giving people what they want. There's no harm in that on paper. But here it's serious. There are people in jail. There's one guy in jail. Everyone else got bond. But there are real consequences here that they don't want to be involved in. Why would they go along with this very clear conspiracy, this charade that is more than just pandering? It's more than just rhetoric. There are consequences. They don't want their hands anywhere near it.
Yeah, and the thing is I think that these members of the GOP have been smart, whether it's Brad Raffensperger, Secretary of State there in Georgia, who has been testifying against Trump in terms of simply speaking truth to Trump contacting him and asking him to find those extra votes. The thing is that if we actually have this whole constitutional democracy thing and they are that it's bolstered and founded on rules, it's important to enforce those rules. And so I do, to the extent I feel somewhat comfortable, commend Kemp for drawing a line in the sand and saying, no, I'm gonna follow the rules here. Even if we've seen so many members of the GOP down there in Georgia ignore the rules when it serves their benefit. So it's nice to see some leaders there in Georgia actually standing up for what's right, even though we know that there are other leaders throughout the country who are also standing up for what's right. Because in addition to raging against the leaders in Georgia, well, Trump ended up spending some of this week defending the value of his real estate empire up there in the Empire State. New York Attorney General Letitia James, well, she claims to have so much evidence of fraud that a trial isn't necessary. This per the New York Times. On Wednesday, Ms. James fired an opening salvo, arguing that a trial is not necessary to find that Mr. Trump and other defendants inflated the value of their assets in annual financial statements, fraudulently obtaining favorable loans and insurance agreements. The fraud was so pervasive, she said in a court filing, that Mr. Trump had falsely boosted his net worth by between $812 million and $2.2 billion each year over the course of a decade. That seems to be pretty huge. Wow. Up to $2.2 billion each year of inflating his value, his net worth. Like this man, how do you fudge those numbers? And it seems that the attorney general up there in New York has a fair amount of evidence, which is why she doesn't think a trial is necessary on whether he has been inflating those values. She wants to go straight to damages and how much Trump should have to pay. And let's look at some of the evidence that Attorney General James has. Ms. James's lawsuit disputes the value of some of Mr. Trump's best known properties, including Mar-a-Lago, his Florida estate, and Trump Tower in Midtown Manhattan. In her new filing, she wrote that given the way that the worth of Trump Tower was calculated in 2018, it was overvalued by nearly $175 million. The following year, she said, the value of the building was falsely boosted by nearly $323 million. That is incredible. It's wild to me how Trump is so willing to overvalue up the amount of his properties, but it's so interesting how he's willing to decrease the amount of his weight. Yeah, this man definitely likes to play with numbers. Jordan, do you agree?
Absolutely. The indictment or the booking information out of Fulton County had me laughing for days. Just 6'3", 215 or whatever he said. That was just like, it's like an NFL player's body. It's still really good. But yeah, this shows just how brazen they were in all aspects of the Trump administration, Trump's personal side, his business side, how fraudulent they were, and how this culture of corruption pervaded every aspect of his life, his political career, his business. I mean, this guy is just the epitome of fraud. So it's good to see people actually going after him. You know, whenever we deal with white collar crimes like this, there's always an element of skepticism and cynicism that sets in for me, as I'm sure with many people watching this. You just never really see people who commit these types of crimes face any real punishment, unfortunately, especially when we're talking in terms of finance. It seems like bankers can do whatever they want. Here, I really, really hope this bucks the trend. We actually get an outlier of a result and he faces repercussions, because I know if anybody watching this, you, me, anybody did exactly that on our tax forms or on trying to get a loan with a bank, you know how hard we'd be hit? He deserves the same type of punishment anybody else would get. I'm tired of this two-tiered justice system, so this is a step in the right direction.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. And you're spot on about the two-tiered justice system. Seeing Michael Cohen, Trump's lawyer, be prosecuted and Trump not facing consequences was absolute hypocrisy. And so I'm so glad New York is now prosecuting Trump for playing that significant role in Cohen and the fraud that he committed on financial documents. And it's great also to see the New York Attorney General pursuing him for the fraud he has committed on his properties for years that officials have looked the other way. Because if we're going to say that we have a democracy and everyone's treated fairly under the system, my God, we should have policies and practices that actually uphold that principle. If you can't pay your bond, you're gonna spend time in jail. And that's what happened with one of Trump's 18 co-defendants in Georgia, who was recently released, and he made clear that he is looking to beef up his resume. Yeah, that's right. Shortly after being released from Fulton County Jail on election interference charges, Harrison Floyd announced that he's exploring the option of running for Congress in Georgia. Here's what the leader of Black Voices for Trump said.
Before we go, I understand politics is in your future of a different variety.
I just want to thank God. I want to thank my wife, and I want to thank District Attorney Willis for giving me this Negro wake up call, because she's reminded me that I need to get back into service and politics and to lead by example. And I will be exploring running for Congress this cycle to make sure that people are held accountable.
Wouldn't that be awesome? You go from a jail cell to a member of Congress. I love it. Good luck, Harrison. Okay.
Thank you, Greg, for all the work that you're doing. Tell them the truth, man.
Oh, wow, that's cute. Yes. Floyd is claiming that Fannie Willis gave him the Negro wake-up call. What he's pretty much indicating there is, by virtue of the fact that he had to be jailed and couldn't make bond, that he realized that Blacks for Trump wasn't the way to go. And now he's going to probably try to pursue Congress on the platform of Trump misleading him in some way and really flip to more of a Dem side of politics. I really don't think that that's going to happen, because as we can see here from what his booking mugshot photo, something about Floyd can tell you that there is clearly a hustle going on here. So let me tell you what happened in terms of his situation with being held on bond. So Floyd, he was finally able to be released on bond earlier this week, and that was after his attorney had negotiated a bond amount of $100,000. By the way, that amount was about $25,000 more than at least two other defendants who were facing similar charges, which may make you wonder what's going on there. But you have to remember that those individuals negotiated their bond before they were actually coming in and turning themselves in, something he didn't do. Well, there's more about Floyd's jail stint. The day Floyd turned himself in, District Attorney Fannie Willis told an attorney who had previously represented him that she had sent someone to meet with him at the jail to offer him a bond, but he refused it and said he didn't want to talk without a lawyer. Willis said Floyd made somewhat of a scene in the lobby of the jail and basically just begged to be booked in, the newspaper reported. Making a scene and begging to be booked kind of sounds like Floyd may have tried to leverage the fact that he could be jailed, got himself jailed instead of negotiating a bond so that he could get this media attention. That's what it seems like to me, but let's go to the AP for more. Lawyers for Donald Trump and the other defendants had all negotiated bond amounts before their client surrendered at the Fulton County Jail by the deadline last Friday. Harrison Floyd had turned himself in on Thursday without first getting a bond amount set and therefore had to remain in jail. A judge denied him bond during a hearing Friday, saying the issue would be addressed by the judge assigned to the case. Oh, right. So it looks like someone was looking to make a spectacle so that they could catch headlines and also be the only defendant who actually had to spend time in jail. That's interesting. It sounds like he's crafting a narrative. And of course, after he was released, well, he went on Steve Bannon's show. And well, this is what Floyd said about the fact that he may have been singled out.
You think you were singled out because you're an African American and particularly a MAGA, you're MAGA, you're a Trump supporter, you're a patriot, you're a veteran. Do you think you were singled out because of that?
Part of it, you know, part of the black culture is always voting Democrat. I went against the code, if you will, at the highest order. And so the district attorney decided she wanted to send me what we call as a Negro wake-up call. And she dialed the wrong number because it didn't go through. So.
Yeah, this sounds like a publicity stunt. But Jordan, so what do you think? Do you think that Floyd is going to all of a sudden lean more toward the left, claiming that, hey, Trump wasn't supporting blacks since no one bailed him out? Or do you think he's going to lean into the Herschel Walker right?
Oh, I think it's the latter. It just seems very clear that he is going to craft a narrative, like you say. Oh, I was a victim because I supported Trump. And, you know, unfortunately, people will incorporate elements of race or not, you know, voting similar to, you know, larger voting trends, and they try to cast themselves as different. You know, Herschel Walker really did this. And there are a lot of racist white Republicans who will use people like Herschel Walker to say, oh, look, I'm not racist. I support Herschel Walker. And this is, if that's the role that he wants, I mean, good luck. I think this is totally disingenuous. It seemed like what you pointed out, demanding to be booked in the jail, making a scene. He wanted this because now he talked about on Newsmax, and like the host even said, you could go from a jail cell to a member of Congress. What an inspirational story. Everyone loves inspirational, uplifting stories like that, right? And that's great for a campaign, but it seems just totally artificial. It seems manufactured. So, you know, wishing this guy the best of luck, but I don't think he's going to go out there and really challenge authority in any meaningful way.
Oh God, no, I don't think so either. And as much as initially I was thinking he was going to go more of the Dem side of things and all of a sudden do a flip the script, I've seen the light. I think you're absolutely right that he is going to stay on the right and truly lean in, because he saw with the absence of Herschel Walker that there's definitely a market for that. Because as you noted, these racists like Lindsey Graham are willing to prop up that right-leaning Negro, so to speak, who is willing to tear down black people, to play into tropes and to do all of these things to be used and puppeted by the GOP, because it can be helpful in attracting white voters who want to say they voted for a black person or generally just have this person play this role. And it's pathetic and sad. We've seen it before. Floyd, I don't think he is really going to convince anybody, but my God, if anything, he's just looking for his payday, because a lot of people enter politics for that very reason. And right now, he should actually be focusing on fighting the Georgia racketeering charges that he's facing alongside those other defendants who are charged with Donald Trump and trying to upend the Georgia presidential election results. And the thing is Floyd doesn't really have the best past, I'll note. We know this from the AP. Floyd was arrested earlier this year for allegedly assaulting an FBI agent, serving him a grand jury subpoena. At a bond hearing Friday, Fulton County Superior Court Judge Emily Richardson denied Floyd bail, pointing to that open case as a reason to remand him to jail. And when it comes to assaulting that FBI agent, here's what happened. So an agent's affidavit filed in US District Court says Floyd screamed, cursed, and jabbed a finger in one FBI agent's face and twice chest bumped the agent in a stairwell. It says Floyd backed down only when the second agent opened his suit coat to reveal his holstered gun. Yeah, this man has a problem. And as much as he was finally able to get bond in his Trump RICO law case, it just shows you that he's really looking to just up the profile on him by way of making noise so that he has run-ins with law enforcement. Jordan, any final thoughts?
I'm just so tired of people running for office for publicity, which seems like what he's doing at the presidential level, what Vivek Ramaswamy is doing. You know, people throughout the Democratic Party definitely do it as well. It's so exhausting. It's a mockery of our system. It does everyone a disservice. They go in and try to be as bombastic as possible. They try to be as sensational as possible because they hope they can one day land, you know, a TV contract at Fox News or a book deal or speaking events. It's such an open and transparent grift. And I'm so tired of it. And it's unfortunate that our system props up these people because they're intriguing. They're new. Vivek Ramaswamy, who is he? He's new. He's young. He's got energy and charisma. Let's focus on him. He has no shot at winning. But because he's saying things that are so sensational on stage, because he's so energetic by contrast with his other candidates, he's getting a ton of media attention. It's disproportionate to how he's polling. It's just so easy to manipulate this system, and he sees it, Ramaswamy sees it, many, many others have seen it, and this is the result.
Yep, they get a great payday, and at the end of the day, even when they're no longer capable of, let's say, completing their duties in office, they can stay around, a la Mitch McConnell, Dianne Feinstein. So of course, politics is very much their game, but fortunately, taking a break is our game, so we'd love to hear your comments. Clarence Thomas finally opted to come clean about his billionaires with benefits relationships. Yeah, believe it or not, the Supreme Court justice is blaming abortion rights advocates for the reason that he claimed he had to take all of those private jets. Seriously. In recently reported disclosures by Justice Thomas, he disclosed that he took private flights due to an increased security risk following the leak of the then draft opinion to overturn Roe v. Wade. Justice Samuel Alito, a frequent Thomas ally, made few changes to his draft opinion when the court later released its opinion that overturned Roe v. Wade and gutted nationwide abortion rights. That's so interesting to me because it would seem that Thomas took a lot of private flights hosted by billionaires and went on vacations and tours that weren't going on anyway at the time that the Supreme Court gutted Roe v. Wade or the opinion was leaked. It's interesting though how he manages to blame abortion rights advocates for the reason that he had to take these private flights. Because if you recall, well, ProPublica had set the value of just one of the chartered flights on the Bombardier Global 5000 jet and 9-day tour on a 162-foot superyacht tour at possibly exceeding $500,000. That really seems like maybe it was just a luxurious vacation and not a need for private security. Let's also note that Thomas didn't just receive these private flights, but he also received meals and lodging, and they primarily came from GOP donor and Nazi memorabilia collector Harlan Crow. This for Jezebel. Over the last several months, ProPublica has reported that Crow and other billionaires have gifted Thomas with at least 38 destination vacations, 26 private jet flights, plus an additional 8 by helicopter, a dozen VIP passes to professional and college sporting events, typically perched in the skybox, 2 stays at luxury resorts in Florida and Jamaica. Yeah, again, it's interesting to me how Clarence Thomas says he needed all those things and in Tide, to what the only excuse he gave was the anti-abortion activist potentially threatening his security. It's also worth noting that Thomas has 24-hour around the clock security provided by what I think it's the US Marshals. Yeah, so I would like to think that he had plenty of protection and he really just wanted to go on luxurious vacations that billionaires were funding. And mind you, as Thomas is out here trying to throw abortion advocates under the bus, well, Thomas is completely and totally not acknowledging the lives of the pregnant people that he and his colleagues have wrought. KFF surveyed nearly 570 OBGYNs who spent the majority of their working hours in direct patient care. Results showed 64% of all OBGYNs surveyed believe the Dobbs ruling has worsened pregnancy mortality. 70% said it's worsened racial and ethnic inequities, and 56% believe it's worsened the ability to attract new doctors to the field. So it sounds like, well, the maternal mortality rates will probably go up as a result of Dobbs. I think the real victim here is Clarence Thomas. Do you think so too, Jordan?
Oh, yeah, poor Clarence Thomas. I got such a kick out of this defense. And if you remember Alito, when his private travel was revealed as well, his justification was, well, if I didn't use it, the seat was just gonna go empty. I had no choice but to take this luxury vacation with a private jet. Like, it's just so totally bogus. Does that also, for Thomas, does that also explain why he's going to sporting events? Are there roving gangs of abortion advocates, you know, targeting sporting events, lurking in the bleachers? Like, this is so transparent. Like, it's so clear what they're doing. They're taking these opulent gifts from billionaire benefactors, and then they tried to hide it. Like, the only reason we know about this is because of an investigative outlet, ProPublica. And now finally he acknowledges it in a disclosure form. Like, this is so ridiculous. Like, he's just giving everyone the finger and people on the right just lap it up. Yeah, that's true. He needed to go to that college football game in a skybox because of abortion advocates. There was nowhere else for him to hide. He had to sit on the 50-yard line with a perfect unobstructed view of the game because of abortion advocates. Like, this is, come on, who believes this? Who actually believes this?
No, and it's funny because you're so incredibly right. So many members of the right, they will just gaslight you, to just lie to your face. Like, who's gonna believe Clarence Thomas didn't feel safe and thus needed to go to Fiji with other billionaires? Like, what? It's almost as good as Mitch McConnell issuing his doctor's notice today saying, oh, he's perfectly fine. All those times he froze up on television and definitely looked like he was mid-stroke. Oh, clean bill of health. He's okay to represent members of Congress. Oh, Dianne Feinstein, totally good. You know, she's just relaxing. It really shows you that lying to the American people seems to be so much ingrained in how the right does business, but they can because they don't face consequences. The Wisconsin GOP really has not given up on their mission of using undemocratic practices to dominate the state government of how the most, what, 50-50 Democrat-Republican states in the country? Yeah, it's scary because in fact, what they've done right now is accelerated their descent to authoritarianism with their threats to impeach and remove the recently elected Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Janet Prestaskiewicz. And she's a Democrat. So here's what they're claiming. The Republican-controlled Wisconsin legislature argued in filings last week that Prestaskiewicz, I cannot say it, that's fine though, has prejudged the cases, which could result in new, more Democratic-friendly maps being drawn before the 2024 election. Republican legislative leaders have threatened to impeach her if she hears the case, a move that they have enough votes to do. Now, Republicans argued in their recusal motion that the justice's campaign statements reveal that her thumb is very much on the scale in this case. During her winning campaign, she called the Republican-drawn maps unfair and rigged and said there needs to be a fresh look at the gerrymandering question. Prestaskiewicz never said how she would rule on a redistricting lawsuit. The thing is that's clear is that judges often, well, they're not supposed to opine on cases that are before them outside of writing their opinion, but she did not have the case before her at the time. She is newly elected. So the comments she made previously shouldn't necessarily be something that are held against her. Because it's interesting because as we've seen with the US Supreme Court justices, when they were before Congress in their Senate hearings, they said all sorts of things, including, no, I wouldn't upend Roe v. Wade. And then what happened when the issue came before them? They decided a different way. Judges can do that. So why now you have the Republicans in Wisconsin trying to ensure that this judge cannot hear this case and isn't continuing allowed to do her job? It really just speaks to the duplicity there. Jordan.
Yeah, this is, you know, we see this across the board with Republicans. When they lose, they really revert to, you know, cheap, dirty, anti-democratic tactics. Obviously in 2020, they stormed the Capitol. In Georgia, they tried to, you know, find votes. But in Wisconsin, this isn't the only instance. Yeah, you know, they're upset about losing the Supreme Court election here. But in 2019, when Tony Evers won, they tried to, or they did, they limited his power. Republicans in the state legislature, knowing that they were going to have a Democratic governor, rewrote the rules to limit what a governor could do in that state because they lost. Like, this is who the Republican Party is. To, you know, compare it to sports, is if you get beat on a play, you just turn around and kick somebody in between the legs. It's filthy. It's dirty. It's unsportsmanlike. But in politics, it's the equivalent of what they're doing. But the consequences are much more severe here. It impacts all of us. Here, you know, this could potentially protect abortion rights in Wisconsin by having an additional Democratic justice on the Supreme Court. But they don't want that. They want to continue this anti-democratic reign of terror. They want to try to continue controlling what people do with their bodies. And if that means trying to kick this woman off of the Supreme Court, so be it. They don't care. They don't care if they have to ignore the fact, like you said, she was commenting on an issue before she was even a judge, before she even had the case in front of her. She was just commenting as a person. They don't care because the end goal for them is complete and total control over the system, over people, over the economy, over society, so they can continue enacting their will. We're all screwed as a result. So this is where we have to remain vigilant. You can't let cynicism win. You can't give up. You can't lose hope because this is how they're playing. They're playing filthy. They're playing dirty. They're not playing by the rules. So you have to fight with even more strength.
No, absolutely. You are spot on correct. And it's a never ending battle, it seems, because they're not even getting to the fact of, is what she said to be actually accurate? Is the gerrymandering issue a problem in terms of ensuring that people's votes are heard? And the thing is we know from the GOP's many campaigns to gerrymander and redline and whatnot, that the efforts put into play to silence marginalized groups who mainly vote Dem, that's something that they are committed to doing. And fortunately, the attorneys are also committed to fighting against this through legal filings. So in two separate redistricting cases, well, lawyers have filed objections or motions objecting to the request that Justice Prostasiewicz actually have to recuse herself. One motion objecting to Prostasiewicz's recusal argued that such a move would be unsupported by fact or law, and it would be contrary to her duties as a justice on the Supreme Court. Unhappy with the electoral results, which they could not prevent through gerrymandering, Republicans now seek to nullify the results and pick their justices. It would take only a simple majority vote in the Assembly to impeach Prostasiewicz and a two-thirds majority vote in the Senate to remove her from office. Republicans have a 65-34 majority, sounds super to me, in the Assembly and 22-11 majority in the Senate. Yeah, so it could very much happen that this recently elected Democratic leaning justice on their Supreme Court could end up being removed simply because the Republicans know it could mean that they're not reelected in legislature. But the thing is maybe they shouldn't be. And in fact, I'd argue they shouldn't be if the people don't want it. And so we can look here at the gerrymandering issue and how incredibly important it is. Check out this here, this chart. Look at the split of then presidential candidates in the last two elections. We have Trump and Clinton. You see how close that is? Less than 0.8% for Wisconsin. And then you look at what Biden and Trump in the last election, and you have something similar here. Separated by what, 1.4%? The votes are so closely aligned, not even 1.4%, less than 1% basically in the last two elections. That speaks volumes about how tight things are. And now they're in a position where Wisconsin legislature could simply overthrow the will of the people by ensuring that marginalized voters are suppressed and that their say is watered down by allowing a gerrymandering map to stay in play. Jordan.
Yeah, this is something that just drives me insane. You would think that people would be off put by this, no matter which political party they affiliate themselves with. This is a party, a controlling party, redrawing maps to preserve their power in ideally in perpetuity for them. We're all screwed as a result. You would think there'd be more opposition, but there isn't, because unfortunately, I think this plays in both parties. If it's their people doing it and they remain in power and that they have a leg up in future elections, they don't care. They'll turn a blind eye to it. They'll justify it however they want. Nobody benefits from a system where we have hyper-partisan gerrymandering. It's totally absurd, but here we are.
Now, you're exactly right. Here we are, and it seems like we're always here with the right trying to water down the voices and the votes of marginalized people, because we know that's what they do to stay in power. They win by illegitimate means. Because if a state Supreme Court justice, if they're going to be elected, that means the will of the people needs to be deferred to. But instead, trying to impeach them for making political statements, not actually prejudging cases, but again, making these political statements, it's wild. This is crazy to me. But then again, this is how the GOP likes to run it. The so-called Proud Boys, well, they made a court appearance and they got a big sentence. Yeah, big time jail behind bars for their roles in the January 6th attack. Two of the criminals, Joseph Biggs and Zachary Rail, well, they received their sentences yesterday, while several other members of the right-wing paramilitary group are set to be sentenced this week. Joseph Biggs, a member of the far right Proud Boys, was sentenced to 17 years in prison for playing a leading role in the Capitol attack. Jason Rail, president of the group's Philadelphia branch, received 15 years in prison. Prosecutors had asked for a 33-year sentence for Biggs and Tario, the longest sought in any of the January 6th trials, and for a 30-year sentence for Rail. Here's Joseph Biggs in the Senate gallery on January 6th. Yep, there he is. It's so funny how so many of them thought they wouldn't be caught, covering up their faces. It's like, that should tell people now that these little things you're doing, they're not going to keep the government from finding you. Here's Zachary Rail. Here is him. He's right in front doing what appears to be, let's just call it what it is, a white power sign. Like, we're not saying, okay, guys, let's just be honest. Anyway, well, the judge in the case, US District Judge Timothy J. Kelly, accepted the request by prosecutors to apply a terrorism enhancement to the sentences, but they happen to feel as though the federal guidelines with that terrorism enhancement would suggest something that wasn't as great. Well, Judge Kelly said neither man intended to kill people, adding that most terrorism enhancement sentences, we're talking about cases where people are talking about blowing up buildings. Kelly also said he was required to avoid significant sentencing disparities, and the sentences the government was seeking were in line with similar cases. Now, before we weigh in on those sentences and if we think they were just, well, I think it is right for us to give someone directly affected by January 6th a first crack at responding. Here's former Capitol Police Officer Michael Fanone.
You believe that those are fair sentences?
I think they're fair. And I'll tell you why. It's because a federal judge appointed to the court who oversaw the case, listened to the facts, and also was privy to the pre-sentencing, pre-trial reports, decided that that was the appropriate sentence.
Yeah, I trust the judges in that case. I think that they were fair, that they were overly fair with a number of the defendants in terms of the punishments that they've received. And so I really have no qualms with the sentences that they handed out. Jordan, do you?
Not really. My only caveat is just I want to see how this affects people. The Trump camp, right? I would think they were, you know, the strategy here is get as many people who are actually on the ground there convicted. And then you can show, I think, easier how they were instructed by Trump, the Trump administration, the Trump campaign to do this. I mean, Trump has tried to distance himself from the impacts of his language, the impacts of him showing up to the protest earlier that day and saying, we're going to march to the Capitol. This really, really undercuts any Trump case. So I'm waiting to see what actually happens in that, because Trump's got many, many legal cases. Ideally, he's punished in all of them, but this is the one I'm the least optimistic about.
Yeah, when you say least optimistic about the case about him trying to overthrow the government, basically.
Yeah, it's just there's so many opportunities for him to, you know, kind of wash his hands of it. But well, I wasn't there. I didn't do it. You know, it might be more difficult. I mean, I think you agree. The viewers agree. This is definitely a direct result of his language. He incited this, and this is something that he wanted, and they were actively in communication with people. But I'm sure he's going to have a ton of excuses and justifications for why it isn't. I just don't know how that case is going to go. I hope he faces repercussions for it, but that's the one out of all of his cases, that's the one I'm the least optimistic about.
And the thing is I agree with you about not being as optimistic. And it's not for legal reasons, because legally, like, you can't, as I teach media law, and as I was talking with the students yesterday and explaining First Amendment speech, how, you know, you can't go into a crowded theater and yell Beyonce. Like, you could end up with a stampede. There are certain words that are completely and totally unacceptable, because it could mean people get hurt. And so in recognizing that reality, we have to consider that Trump's command for people to march to the Capitol and his push, the language he used, even if he didn't explicitly say, let's go string up Mike Pence, he did enough to create this havoc that threatened the lives of our leadership. And thus he should be held accountable for it. But at the end of the day, I think in part that people aren't gonna necessarily wanna hold Trump accountable for his words, but they'd be more likely to hold him accountable, well, I guess for some of the words in terms of the call to Brad Raffensperger in Georgia, or also holding him accountable for keeping those documents knowingly so, even though the government had said, hey, we're gonna need those security clearance type related documents back. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it's more difficult and challenging to actually hold him accountable for inciting that attack on the US Capitol. And I also think that there is some questions on whether there's potential for sincere, maybe leniency, or maybe getting a lighter sentence on appeal for some of these January 6th defendants. For example, starting with Biggs, who was reportedly speaking through tears about his sentence. Well, he said this in his plea to the court just before he actually got the years that the judge was giving him. My curiosity got the better of me, and I'm going to have to live with that for the rest of my life. I'm so sorry. I'm not a terrorist. I don't have hate in my heart. I don't want to hurt people. That's really interesting. I'm not a terrorist. I don't have hate in my heart. Like curiosity. I've never been curious about breaking into a federal government building and joining a mob who are trying to attack our leadership. I don't know, Jordan, have you?
No, not lately. This defense, Your Honor, I was curious, is so great. I'm dying to know if that's ever worked. The judge is seeing that, like, well, okay, we've all been curious before. All right. Like, that's so good. It's so good. I'm sorry. That just totally threw me off. I hadn't seen that yet.
No, it makes me wonder if the lawyers will actually try to coach their client on, hey, how would that sound to you as a logical person? Would you give yourself a lighter sentence because you were curious? Like, I don't know. I just feel like there's no one really in a position who would take that in any way seriously. And the second defendant who was sentenced, Rail, well, he was also choking back tears, you know, in the face of consequences. And he had to pause himself to compose himself. And he said he had fallen hook, line, and sinker for lies about the 2020 election being stolen. He went on to say this, politicians started spreading lies about the election. I stand up here and say I'm done with all of it. I'm done with politics. I'm done with peddling lies for other people who don't care about me. As far as I'm concerned, I think that was a better statement of truth, that you got riled up at the same time. You know, it's like there are a lot of lies out there. There's a bunch of propaganda. Your willingness to sign on to it and to take action against our government because of it doesn't make you a patriot, nor does it necessarily make you swindled. You know, as an individual, you have an obligation to investigate more, to actually follow the appropriate channels before you know, go ahead and take action. Jordan.
I don't entirely buy that statement, though. I agree it's better than the Your Honor, I was curious attempt. But the Proud Boys knew what they were doing, and they knew what their whole organization's role in the right-wing world was. It was terror, intimidate, brute force, violence. they, I mean, from showing up to pride events, to left-wing events, yeah, to attacking people. I mean, they knew what their role was, and it was just to use force to try to scare, intimidate, get their way for broader right-wing objectives. And that was the case here. It's not that he was misled. I think many of them, I'm confident many of them knew that Trump lost in 2020. What he's upset about is that he thought that this was going to work. And he was misled into thinking that all they needed to do was show up and, you know, flex their muscle and attack people, and the outcome would change. That obviously didn't happen, and that couldn't happen. All it ended up doing was getting a bunch of them thrown in jail, including these guys. That's what they're upset about. That's how they were misled. They were misled into thinking this was an effective strategy, that Mike Pence could somehow just change the result of the election. None of that was ever going to work. That was the lie. I don't think any of them really actually thought that 2020 was different. They thought this would work and they would get their way. And this is like similar to the Wisconsin stuff, right? They want to just change. They want to change the rules. They want to change the system. They want to rig it in their favor so they have power in perpetuity. And that's what they thought they were doing here. They were thought they were taking a step where Republicans and Trump would just be the forever party and always have control over the federal government. And this is the way they would do that. But that was never going to work.
No, it was never going to work, and they didn't care if it was going to work or not. They were going to try it because that was truly their objective. And you know what? Something that I've always tried, and now I feel like the objective possibly could be reached, is reforming marijuana. As we know, at the federal level, it's been listed as a Schedule I next to ketamine, heroin, and all that nature, which is incredible nonsense. And now, well, the Department of Health and Human Services have recommended to the DEA to reclassify that ish. Yeah, put it down with a Schedule III. That's something that we very much need. It has been long overdue. And the AP, they say this, that rescheduling the drug would reduce or potentially eliminate criminal penalties for possession. Marijuana is currently classified, as I mentioned, as a Schedule I drug alongside heroin and LSD. According to the DEA, Schedule I drugs have no currently accepted medical use in the United States, a lack of accepted safety for use under medical supervision, and a high potential for abuse. It's wild to me how marijuana, which we know was criminalized for racist reasons because Mexicans and Black people used the drugs, and it has been really ushered through the years as leading these tropes, that in 2023, finally, we're getting some relief, especially given that we've known for years that marijuana is a great aid for people who suffer from various viruses, disease, and health issues. It's like, really, guys, we're finally here. And while I'm happy to see it, I am so incredibly bothered by the fact that there are still people serving prison sentences for using and possessing marijuana when other people are already out there capitalizing and making money. Jordan, any quick thoughts before we head to the aftermath?
Yeah, it's ridiculous that there are still some aspects of our society and government that treat marijuana no different than actual hard drugs. Just ridiculous. It's super safe. I don't smoke. Not really my thing, but I don't care if anyone else does. And I think it's ridiculous that you can go down to the street, go to a bar and get a beer, but in some places in this country you can't smoke a joint at home at night or grow a plant. Like, who cares? Who cares? A lot of states are leaving money on the table in tax revenue. And that's what I think. If you sell it in an economic standpoint, you're going to see some of the red states start to come around on it because they're missing out. And other states are going to get a huge, especially blue states, are getting a huge head start in terms of manufacturing, commodifying it. The tax revenue they're leaving on the table is just ridiculous.
Absolutely. And the ignorance is also ridiculous. And we've seen largely alcohol manufacturers and distributors being the one to push against marijuana being legalized and descheduled. So it's nice that finally that the government is getting on board. Because again, we know that alcohol, heroin, things like that, those kind of drugs, that those have been harmful and dangerous to people. They cause them to engage in behaviors that do not in any way uplift society. But what, cannabis, someone's going to go on a bender of eating Cheetos, is going to relax, is going to enjoy CBD and how it can help rejuvenate and restimulate people's muscles and body. Like, It just, again, the racist reasons that it's been criminalized are problematic, and I'm glad to see some change come to pass. I'm also glad to join you all in the aftermath, which we will have coming up momentarily.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.